gun that your father fired at him.
That gun was dropped by a random security officer, I said. Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm semi-auto. There was nothing special about it.
You remember the exact gun?
I kicked a bit of trash as we walked through the steel-walled underground tunnel. As I said, I remember that day. Besides, I know guns. I hesitated, then admitted more. When I was young, I assumed the type of gun must have been special. I saved up, planning to buy one, but nobody would sell to a kid my age. I was planning to sneak into the palace and shoot him.
Sneak into the palace, Abraham said flatly.
Yes.
And shoot Steelheart.
I was 10, I said. Give me a little credit.
To a boy with aspirations like that, I would extend my respect, but not credit or life insurance.
Abraham sounded amused.
You are an interesting man, David Charleston. But you sound like you are an even more interesting child.
I smiled. There was something invitingly friendly about this soft-spoken, articulate Canadian with his light French accent. You almost didn't notice the enormous machine gun with mounted grenade launcher resting on his shoulder. We were still in the steel catacombs, where even such a high level of armament didn't draw particular attention. We passed occasional groups of people huddled around burning fires or heaters plugged into pirated electrical jacks. More than a few of the people we passed carried assault rifles. Over the last few days, I'd ventured out of the hideout a couple times, always in the company of one of the other reckoners. The babysitting bothered me, but I got it. I couldn't exactly hope for them to trust me yet, not completely. Besides, though I would never admit it out loud, I didn't want to walk the steel catacombs alone. I'd avoided these depths for years. At the factory, they told stories about the depraved people, terrible monsters who lived down here. Gangs that literally fed on the foolish who wandered into forgotten hallways, killing them and feasting on their flesh. Murderers, criminals, addicts. Not the normal sort of criminals and addicts we had up above, either. Specially depraved ones. Perhaps those were exaggerations. The people we passed did seem dangerous, but more in a hostile way, not in an insane way. They watched with grim expressions and eyes that tracked your every movement until you passed out of their view. These people wanted to be alone. They were the outcasts of the outcasts. Why does he let them live down here? I asked as we passed another group. Megan didn't respond. She was walking ahead of us, keeping to herself. But Abraham glanced over his shoulder, looking toward the firelight and the line of people who had stepped up to make sure we left.
There will always be people like them, Abraham said. Steelheart knows it. Tia, she thinks he made this place for them so he would know where they were. It is useful to know where your outcasts are gathering. Better the ones you know about than the ones you cannot anticipate.
That made me uncomfortable. I thought we were completely outside Steelheart's view down here. Perhaps this place wasn't as safe as I'd assumed.
You cannot keep all men confined all the time, Abraham said. Not without creating a strong prison. So instead, you allow some measure of freedom for those who really, really want it. That way, they do not become rebels, if you do it right.
He did it wrong with us, I said softly.
Yes. Yes, indeed he did.
I kept glancing back as we walked. I couldn't shake the worry that some of those in the catacombs would attack us. They never did, though. I started as I realized that at that moment, some of them were following us. Abraham, I said softly. They're following.
Yes, he said calmly. There are some waiting for us ahead, too.
In front of us, the tunnel narrowed. Sure enough, a group of shadowed figures were standing there waiting. They wore the mismatched cast-off clothing common to many catacombers, and they carried old rifles and pistols wrapped in leather. The type of guns that probably only worked one day out of two and had been carried by a dozen different people over the last 10 years. The three of us stopped walking, and the group behind caught up, boxing us in. I couldn't see their faces. None carried mobiles, and it was dark without their glow.
That's some nice equipment, friend, said one of the figures in the group in front of us.
Nobody made any overtly hostile moves. They held their weapons with barrels pointed to the sides. I carefully started to unsling my gun, my heart racing. Abraham, however, laid a hand on my shoulder. He carried his massive machine gun in his other hand, barrel pointed upward, and wore one of the Reckoner jackets like Megan, though his was gray and white, with a high collar and several pockets, while hers was standard brown leather. They always wore their jackets when they left the hideout. I'd never seen one work, and I didn't know how much protection they could realistically offer.
Be still, Abraham said to me.
But
I will deal with this,
he said, his voice perfectly calm as he took a step forward. Megan stepped up beside me, hand on the holster of her pistol. She didn't look any calmer than I was, both of us trying to watch the people ahead and behind us at once.
You like our equipment? Abraham asked politely.
You should leave the guns, the thug said. Continue on.
This would not make any sense, Abraham said. If I have weapons that you want, the implication is that my firepower is greater than yours. If we were to fight, you would lose. You see? Your intimidation, it does not work.
There are more of us than you, friend, the guy said softly. And we're ready to die. Are you?
I felt a chill at the back of my neck. No, these weren't the murderers I'd been led to believe lived down here. They were something more dangerous, like a pack of wolves. I could see it in them now, in the way they moved, in the way groups of them had watched us pass. These were outcasts, but outcasts who had banded together to become one. They no longer lived as individuals, but as a group. And for this group, guns, like the ones Abraham and Megan carried, would increase their chances of survival. They'd take them, even if it meant losing some of their numbers. It looked to be about a dozen men and women against just three, and we were surrounded. They were terrible odds. I itched to lower my rifle and start shooting.
You didn't ambush us, Abraham pointed out. You hope to be able to end this without death.
The thieves didn't reply.
It is very kind of you to offer us this chance, Abraham said, nodding to them.
There was a strange sincerity to Abraham. From another person, words like those might have sounded condescending or sarcastic. But from him, they sounded genuine.
You have let us pass several times, through territory you considered to be your own. For this also, I give you my thanks.
The guns, the thug said.
I cannot give them to you, Abraham said. We need them. Beyond this, if we were to give them to you, it would go poorly for you and yours. Others would see them and would desire them. Other gangs would seek to take them from you, as you have sought to take them from us.
That isn't for you to decide.
Perhaps not. However, in respect of the honor you have shown us, I will offer you a deal. A duel between you and me. Only one man need be shot. If we win, you will leave us be and allow us to pass freely through this area in the future. If you win, my friends would deliver up their weapons, and you may take from my body that which you wish.
These are the steel catacombs, the man said.
Some of his companions were whispering now, and he glared at them with shadowed eyes, then continued.
This is not a place of deals.
And yet, you already offered us one, Abraham said calmly. You did us honor. I trust that you will show it to us again.
It didn't seem to be about honor to me. They hadn't ambushed us because they were afraid of us. They wanted the weapons, but they didn't want to fight. They aimed to intimidate us instead. The lead thug, however, finally nodded.
Fine, he said. A deal.
Then he quickly raised his rifle and fired. The bullet hit Abraham right in the chest. I jumped, cursing as I scrambled for my gun. But Abraham didn't fall. He didn't even twitch. Two more shots cracked in the narrow tunnel, bullets hitting him, one in the leg, one in the shoulder. Ignoring his powerful machine gun, he calmly reached to his side and took his handgun out of its holster, then shot the thug in the thigh. The man cried out, dropping his battered rifle and collapsing, holding his wounded leg. Most of the others seemed too shocked to respond, though a few lowered their weapons nervously. Abraham casually reholstered his pistol. I felt sweat trickle down my brow. The jacket seemed to be doing its job, and doing it better than I'd assumed, but I didn't have one of those yet. If the other thugs opened fire. Abraham handed his machine gun to Megan, then walked forward and knelt beside the fallen thug.
Place pressure here, please, he said in a friendly tone,
positioning the man's hand on his thigh.
There, very good. Now, if you don't mind, I'll bandage the wound. I shot you where the bullet could pass through the muscle, so it wouldn't get lodged inside.
The thug groaned at the pain as Abraham took out a bandage and wrapped the leg.
You cannot kill us, friend, Abraham
continued, speaking more softly.
We are not what you thought us to be. Do you understand?
The thug nodded vigorously.
It would be wise to be our allies. Do you not think?
Yes,
the thug said.
Wonderful, Abraham replied, tying the bandage tight. Change that twice a day. Use boiled bandages.
Yes.
Good.
Abraham stood and took his gun back and turned to the rest of the thug's group.
Thank you for letting us pass, he said to the others.
They looked confused but parted, creating a path for us. Abraham walked forward and we followed in a hurry. I looked over my shoulder at the rest of the gang gathered around their fallen leader.
That was amazing, I said as we got farther away.
No, it was a group of frightened people, defending what little they can lay claim to, their reputation. I feel bad for them.
They shot you 3 times.
I gave them permission.
Only after they threatened us.
And only after we violated their territory, Abraham said.
He handed his machine gun to Megan again, then took off his jacket as he walked. I could see that one of the bullets had penetrated it. Blood was seeping out around a hole in his shirt.
The jacket didn't stop them all?
They aren't perfect, Megan said, as Abraham took off the shirt.
Mine fails all the time.
We stopped as Abraham cleaned the wound with a handkerchief, then pulled out a little shard of metal. It was all that was left of the bullet, which had apparently disintegrated upon hitting his jacket. Only one little shard had made it through to his skin.
What if he'd shot you in the face? I asked.
The jackets hide an advanced shielding device, Abraham said. It isn't the jacket itself that protects, really, but the field the jacket extends. It offers some protection for the entire body, an invisible barrier to resist force.
What? Really? That's amazing.
Yes.
Abraham hesitated, then pulled his shirt back on.
It probably would not have stopped a bullet to the face, however. So I am fortunate they did not choose to shoot me there.
As I said, Megan interjected, they are far from perfect.
She seemed annoyed with Abraham. The shield works better with things like falls and crashes.
Bullets are so small and hit with so much velocity, the shields overload quickly. Any of those shots could have killed you, Abraham.
But they did not.
You still could have been hurt.
Megan's voice was stern.
I was hurt.
She rolled her eyes.
You could have been hurt worse.
Or they could have opened fire, he said, and killed us all. It was a gamble that worked. Besides, I believe they now think we are epics.
I almost thought you were one, I admitted.
Normally we keep this technology hidden, Abraham said, putting on his jacket again. People cannot wonder whether the Reckoners are epics. It would undermine what we stand for. However, in this case, I believe it will go well for us. Your plan calls for there to be rumors of new epics in the city, working against Steelheart. These men will hopefully spread that rumor.
I guess, I said. It was a good move, Abraham. But Sparks. For a moment, I thought we were dead.
People rarely want to kill, David,
Abraham said calmly.
It's not basic to the makeup of the healthy human mind. In most situations, they will go to great lengths to avoid killing. Remember that, and it will help you.
I've seen a lot of people kill, I replied.
Yes, and that will tell you something. Either they felt they had no choice, in which case, if you could give them another choice, they would likely have taken it. Or they were not of healthy mind.
And epics? Abraham reached to his neck and fingered the small silver necklace he wore there.
Epics are not human.
I nodded. With that, I agreed.
I believe our conversation was interrupted,
Abraham said, taking his gun from Megan and casually resting it on his shoulder as we walked onward.
How did Steelheart get wounded? It could have been the weapon your father used. You never tried your brave plan of finding an identical gun, then doing...
What was it you said? Sneaking into Steelheart's palace and shooting him?
No, I didn't get to try it, I said, blushing. I came to my senses. I don't think it was the gun, though. M&P 9mm aren't exactly uncommon. Someone's got to have tried shooting him with one. Besides, I've never heard of an epic whose weakness was being shot by a specific caliber of bullet or make of gun.
Perhaps, Abraham said. But many epic weaknesses do not make sense. It could have something to do with that specific gun manufacturer. Or instead, it could have something to do with the composition of the bullet. Many epics are weak to specific alloys.
True, I admitted. But what would be different about that particular bullet that wasn't the same for all of the others fired at him?
I don't know, Abraham said, but it is worth considering. What do you think caused his weakness?
Something in the vault, like Tia thinks, I said with only some measure of confidence. Either that or something about the situation. Maybe my father's specific age let him get through. Weird, I know. But there was an epic in Germany who could only be hurt by someone who was 37 exactly. Or maybe it was the number of people firing on him. Crossmark, an epic down in Mexico, can only be hurt if 5 people are trying to kill her at once. It doesn't matter, Megan interrupted, turning around in the hallway and stopping in the tunnel to look at us. You're never going to figure it out. His weakness could be virtually anything. Even with David's little story, assuming he didn't just make it up, there's no way of knowing. Abraham and I stopped in place. Megan's face was red, and she seemed barely in control. After a week of her acting cold and professional, her anger was a big shock. She spun around and kept walking. I glanced at Abraham, and he shrugged. We continued on, but our conversation died. Megan quickened her pace when Abraham tried to catch up to her, and so we just left her to it. Both she and Abraham had been given directions to the weapons merchant, so she could guide us just as well as he could. Apparently, this diamond fellow was only going to be in town for a short time, and when he came, he always set up shop in a different location. We walked for a good hour through the twisting maze of catacombs before Megan stopped us at an intersection, her mobile illuminating her face as she checked the map Tia had uploaded to it. Abraham took his mobile off the shoulder of his jacket and did the same.
Almost there, he told me, pointing. This way, at the end of this tunnel.
How well do we trust this guy? I asked.
Not at all,
Megan said. Her face had returned to its normal impassive mask. Abraham nodded.
Best to never trust a weapons merchant, my friend. They all sell to both sides, and they are the only ones who win if a conflict continues indefinitely.
Both sides? I asked. He sells to Steelheart, too?
He won't admit it if you ask, Abraham said, but it is certain that he does. Even Steelheart knows not to harm a good weapons dealer. Kill or torture a man like Diamond? And future merchants won't come here. Steelheart's army will never have good technology compared to the neighbors. That's not saying that Steelheart likes it. Diamond, he could never open his shop up in the overstreets. Down here, however, Steelheart will turn a blind eye, so long as his soldiers continue to get their equipment.
So, whatever we buy from him, I said, Steelheart will know about it.
No, no, Abraham said.
He seemed amused, as if I were asking questions about something incredibly simple, like the rules to hide and seek.
Weapons merchants don't talk about other clients, Megan said. As long as those clients live, at least.
Diamond arrived back in the city just yesterday, Abraham said,
leading the way down the tunnel.
He will be open for 1 week's time. If we are first to get to him, we can see what he has before Steelheart's people do. We can get an advantage this way, eh? Diamond, he often has very interesting wares.
All right, then, I thought. I guess it didn't matter that Diamond was slime. I'd use any tool I could to get to Steelheart. Moral considerations had stopped bothering me years ago. Who had time for morals in a world like this? We reached the corridor leading to Diamond's shop. I expected guards, perhaps in full-powered armor. The only person there, though, was a young girl in a yellow dress. She was lying on a blanket on the floor and drawing pictures on a piece of paper with a silver pen. She looked up at us and began chewing on the end of the pen. Abraham politely handed the girl a small data chip, which she took and examined for a moment before tapping it on the side of her mobile.
We are with Phaedrus, Abraham said. We have an appointment.
Go on,
the girl answered, tossing the chip back to him. Abraham snatched it from the air, and we continued down the corridor. I glanced over my shoulder at the girl. That's not very strong security.
It's always something new with Diamond, Abraham said, smiling. There is probably something elaborate behind the scenes, some kind of trap the girl can spring. It probably has to do with explosives. Diamond likes explosives.
We turned a corner and stepped into heaven.
Here we are, Abraham announced.
16. Diamond's shop wasn't set up in a room, but instead in one of the long corridors of the catacombs. I assumed that the other end of the corridor was either a dead end or had guards. The space was lit from above by portable lights that were almost blinding after the general darkness of the catacombs. Those lights shone on guns. Hundreds of them hung on the walls of the hallway. Beautiful, polished steel and deep, muted blacks. Assault rifles, handguns, massive electron-compressed beasts like the one Abraham carried with full gravitonics. Old-style revolvers, grenades in stacks, rocket launchers. I'd only ever owned two guns, my pistol and my rifle. The rifle was a good friend. I'd had her for 3 years now, and I'd come to rely on her a lot. She worked when I needed her. We had a great relationship. I cared for her, and she cared for me. At the sight of Diamond's shop, though, I felt like a boy who'd only ever owned a single toy car and had just been offered a showroom full of Ferraris. Abraham sauntered into the hallway. He didn't give the weapons much of a look. Megan entered, and I followed on her heels, staring at the walls and their wares. Wow, I said. It's like a banana farm for guns. A banana farm? Megan said flatly. Sure, you know how bananas grow from their trees and hang down and stuff? Knees, you suck at metaphors. I blushed. An art gallery, I thought. I should have said like an art gallery for guns. No, wait. If I said it that way, it would mean the gallery was intended for guns to come visit. A gallery of guns, then?
How do you even know what bananas are?
Megan said quietly, as Abraham greeted a portly man standing beside a blank portion of wall. This could only be Diamond.
Steelheart doesn't import from Latin America.
My encyclopedias, I said, distracted. A gallery of guns for the criminally destructive. I should have said that. That sounds impressive, doesn't it? Read them a few times. Some of it stuck.
Encyclopedias?
Yeah.
Which you read a few times.
I stopped, realizing what I'd said.
I just browsed them. You know, looking for pictures of guns.
You're such a nerd, she said, walking ahead to join Abraham. She sounded amused. I sighed, then joined them and tried to get her attention to show off my new metaphor, but Abraham was introducing us.
New kid, he said, gesturing to me. David.
Diamond nodded to me. He had on a brightly colored floral patterned shirt, like people supposedly once wore in the tropics. Maybe that was where I'd gotten the whole banana metaphor. He had a white beard and long white hair, though he was balding at the front and wore a huge smile that sparkled in his eyes.
I assume, he said to Abraham, you want to see what's new, what's exciting. You know, my other clients haven't even been through here yet. You're the first. First picks.
And highest prices, Abraham said, turning to look at the wall of guns. Death comes at such a premium these days.
Says the man carrying an electron-compressed Manchester 451, Diamond said. With gravitonics and a full grenade dock. Nice explosions on those. Little on the small side, but you can bounce them in really fun ways.
Show us what you have, Abraham said politely, though his voice seemed strained.
I could swear he had sounded more calm talking to the thugs who had shot him. Curious.
I'm getting some things ready to show you, Diamond said.
He had a smile like a parrotfish, which I've always assumed looked like parrots, though I've never actually seen either.
Why don't you just have a look around, browse a bit, tell me what suits your fancy?
Very well, Abraham said. Thank you.
He nodded to us. We knew what we were supposed to do. Look for anything out of the ordinary. A weapon that could cause a lot of destruction. Destruction that could seem like the work of an epic. If we were going to imitate one, we'd need something impressive. Megan stepped up beside me, studying a machine gun that fired incendiary rounds.
I'm not a nerd, I hissed at her softly. Why does it matter? She asked, her tone neutral. There's nothing wrong with being smart. In fact, if you are intelligent, you'll be a stronger asset to the team. I just don't like being called that. Besides, whoever heard of a nerd jumping from a moving jet and shooting an epic in midair while plummeting toward the ground? I've never heard of anyone doing that.
Phaedrus did it, I said. Execution of Redleaf, 3 years ago up in Canada.
That story was exaggerated,
Abraham said softly, walking by.
It was a helicopter, and it was all part of the plan. We were very careful. Now please, keep focused on our current task.
I shut my mouth and began studying the weapons. Incendiary rounds were impressive, but not particularly original. That wasn't flashy enough for us. In fact, any type of basic gun wouldn't work. Whether it shot bullets, rockets, or grenades, it wouldn't be convincing. We needed something more like the energy weapons enforcement had, a way to mimic an epic's innate firepower. I moved down the hallway, and the weapons seemed to grow more unusual the farther I walked. I stopped beside a curious group of objects. They appeared to be innocent enough. A water bottle, a mobile phone, a pen. They were attached to the wall like the weapons.
Ah, you are a discerning man, are you, David?
I jumped, turned to see Diamond grinning behind me. How could a fat man move so quietly?
What are they? I asked.
Advanced stealth explosives, Diamond answered proudly.
He reached up and tapped a section of the wall, and an image appeared on it. He had an imager hooked up here, apparently. It showed a water bottle sitting on a table. A businessman strolled past, looking at some papers in his hand. He set them on the table, then twisted the cap off the water, and exploded. I jumped back,
Ah, Diamond said. I hope you appreciate the value of this footage. It's rare that I get good shots of a stealth explosive being deployed in the field. This one is quite remarkable. Notice how the explosion flung the body back, but didn't damage too much nearby? That's important in a stealth explosive, particularly if the person to be assassinated might have valuable documents on them.
That's disgusting, I said, turning away.
We are in the business of death, young man.
The video, I mean.
He wasn't a very nice person, if it helps.
I doubted that mattered to Diamond. He seemed affable as he tapped the wall.
Good explosion. I'll be honest, I half keep these to sell just because I like showing off that video. It's one of a kind.
Do they all explode? I asked, examining the innocent-looking devices.
The pen is a detonator, Diamond said. Click the back and you set off one of those little eraser devices next to it. They're universal blasting caps. Stick them close to something explosive, trigger them, and they can usually set it off. Depends on the substance, but they're programmed with some pretty advanced detection algorithms. They work on most explosive substances. Stick one of those to some guy's grenade, walk away, then click the pen.
If you could clip one of those to his grenade, Megan said, approaching, you could have just pulled the pin, or better yet, shot him.
It's not for every situation, Diamond said defensively. But they can be very fun. What's better than detonating your enemy's own explosives when he's not expecting it?
Diamond, Abraham called from down the corridor. Come tell me about this.
Ah, excellent choice. Wonderful explosions from that one.
He scuttled off. I looked at the panel full of innocent yet deadly objects. Something about them felt very wrong to me. I'd killed men before, but I'd done it honestly, with a gun in my hands and only because I'd been forced to. I didn't have many philosophies about life, but one of them was something my father had taught me. Never throw the first punch. If you have to throw the second, try to make sure they don't get up for a third.
These could be useful, Megan said, arms still crossed. Though I doubt that blowhard really understands what for.
I know, I said, trying to redeem myself. I mean, recording some poor guy's death like that? It was totally unprofessional.
Actually, he sells explosives, she said. So having a recording like that is professional of him. I suspect he has recordings of each of these weapons being fired, as we can't test them hands-on down here.
Megan, that was a recording of some guy blowing up. I shook my head, revolted. It was awful. You shouldn't show off stuff like that.
She hesitated, looking troubled about something. Yes, of course.
She looked at me.
You never did explain why you were so bothered by being called a nerd.
I told you, I don't like it because, you know, I want to do awesome stuff, and nerds don't.
That's not it, she said, staring at me coolly.
Sparks, but her eyes were beautiful.
There's something deeper about it that bothers you, and you need to get over it. It's a weakness.
She glanced at the water bottle, then turned and walked over to the thing Abraham was inspecting. It was some kind of bazooka. I secured my rifle over my shoulder and stuck my hands in my pockets. It seemed that I was spending a lot of time lately getting lectured. I thought that leaving the factory would end all of that, but I guess I should have known better. I turned from Megan and Abraham and looked across at the wall nearest me. I was having trouble focusing on the guns, which was a first for me. My mind was working over what she'd asked. Why did being called a nerd bother me? I walked over to her side.
Don't know if it's what we want, Abraham was saying.
But the explosions are so big, Diamond replied.
It's because they took the smart ones away, I said softly to Megan. I could feel her eyes on me, but I continued staring at the wall. A lot of kids at the factory tried so hard to prove how smart they were, I said quietly. We had school, you know,
You went to school half the day, worked the other half, unless you got expelled. If you did poorly, the teacher just expelled you. And after that, you worked full days. School was easier than the factory, so most of the kids tried really hard. The smart ones, though? The really smart ones? The nerds? They left. Got taken to the city above. If you showed some skill with computers or math or writing, off you went. They got good jobs, I hear. In Steelheart's propaganda corps or his accounting offices or something like that. When I was young, I'd have laughed about Steelheart having accountants. He's got a lot of them, you know. You need people like them in an empire. Megan looked at me, curious.
So you...
Learned to be dumb, I said. Rather, to be mediocre. The dumb ones got kicked out of school, and I wanted to learn. Knew I needed to learn, so I had to stay. I also knew that if I went up above, I'd lose my freedom. He keeps a lot better watch over his accountants than he does his factory workers. There were other boys like me. A lot of the girls moved on fast, the smart ones. Some of the boys I knew, though, they started to see it as a mark of pride that they weren't taken above. You didn't want to be one of the smart ones. I had to be extra careful, since I asked so many questions about the epics. I had to hide my notebooks, find ways to throw off those who thought I was smart.
But you're not there anymore.
You're with the Reckoners, so it doesn't matter.
It does, I said, because it's not who I am. I'm not smart. I'm just persistent.
My friends who were smart, they didn't have to study at all. I had to study like a horse for every test I took.
Like a horse?
You know, because horses work hard, pulling carts and plows and things.
Yeah, I'll just ignore that one.
I'm not smart, I said.
I didn't mention that part of the reason I had to study so hard was because I needed to know the answer to each and every question perfectly. Only then could I ensure that I would get the exact number of questions wrong to remain in the middle of the pack. Smart enough to stay in school, but not worthy of notice or attention. Besides, I continued, the people I knew who were really smart, they learned because they loved it. I didn't. I hated studying.
You read the encyclopedia a few times.
Looking for things that could be epic weaknesses, I said. I needed to know different types of metal, chemical compounds, elements, and symbols. Practically anything could be a weakness. I hoped something would spark in my head, something about him.
So it's all about him.
Everything in my life is about him, Megan, I said, looking at her. Everything.
We fell silent, though Diamond continued blabbing on.
Abraham had turned to look at me. He seemed thoughtful.
Great, I realized.
He heard. Just great.
That will be enough, please, Diamond,
Abraham said. That weapon really won't work.
The weapons merchant sighed.
Very well, but perhaps you can give me a clue as to what might work?
Something distinctive, Abraham said. Something nobody has seen before, but also something destructive.
Well, I don't have much that isn't destructive, Diamond said. But distinctive. Let me see.
Abraham waved for us to keep searching. As Megan moved off, however, he took me by the arm. He had quite a strong grip.
Steelheart takes the smart ones, Abraham said softly, because he fears them. He knows, David, all of these guns, they do not frighten him. They won't be what overthrows him. It will be the person clever enough, smart enough, to figure out the chink in his armor. He knows he can't kill them all, so he employs them. When he dies, it will be because of someone like you. Remember that.
He released my arm and walked after Diamond. I watched him go, then walked over to another group of weapons. His words didn't really change anything, but oddly, I did feel myself standing a little taller as I looked at a line of guns and was able to identify each of the manufacturers. I'm totally not a nerd, though. I still know the truth, at least.
I looked over the guns for a few minutes, proud of how many I could identify. Unfortunately, none of them seemed distinctive enough. Actually, the fact that I could identify them guaranteed that they weren't distinctive enough. We needed something nobody had seen before. Maybe he won't have anything, I thought. If he has a rotating stock, then we may have picked the wrong time to visit. Sometimes a grab bag doesn't give anything worthwhile. I stopped as I noticed something different. Motorcycles. There were three of them in a row near the far side of the hallway. I hadn't seen them at first, as I'd been focusing on the guns. They were sleek, their bodies a deep green with black patterns running up their sides. They made me want to hunch over and crouch down to make myself have less wind resistance. I could imagine shooting through the streets on one of these. They looked so dangerous, like alligators. Really fast alligators wearing black. Ninja alligators. I decided not to use that one on Megan. They didn't have any weapons on them that I could see. Though there were some odd devices on the sides. Maybe energy weapons? They didn't seem to fit much with what Diamond had here, but then again, what he had was pretty eclectic. Megan walked past me, and I raised a finger to point at the motorcycles. No, she said, not even looking. But, no. But they're awesome, I said, holding up my hands, as if that should have been enough of an argument. And sparks, it should have been. They were awesome.
You could barely drive some lady's sedan knees, Megan said. I don't want to see you on the back of something with gravitonics.
Gravitonics? That was even more awesome.
No, Megan said firmly. I looked toward Abraham, who was inspecting something nearby. He glanced at me, then over at the bikes, and smiled.
No.
I sighed. Wasn't shopping for weapons supposed to be more fun than this?
Diamond, Abraham called to the dealer. What is this?
The weapons merchant began waddling over.
Oh, it's wonderful. Great explosions.
His face fell as he neared and saw what Abraham was actually looking at.
Oh, that. It is quite wonderful, though I don't know if it would suit your needs.
The item in question was a large rifle with a very long barrel and a scope on top. It looked a little bit like an AWM, one of the sniper rifles the factory had used as a model in building their products. The barrel was larger, however, and there were some odd coils around the forestock. It was painted a dark black green and had a big hole where the magazine should have fit. Diamond sighed.
This weapon is wonderful. But you are a good customer. I should warn you that I don't have the resources to make it work.
What? Megan asked. You're selling a broken gun?
It's not that, Diamond said, tapping the section of the wall beside the gun.
An image displayed of a man set up on the ground, holding the rifle and looking through the scope at some run-down buildings.
This is called a Gauss gun. Developed using research on some epic or another who throws bullets at people.
Ricochet, I said, nodding. An Irish epic.
That's really his name? Abraham asked softly.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
He shivered.
Taking a beautiful French word and turning it into something Cody would say. Galice.
Anyway, I said. He can make objects unstable by touching them. Then they explode when subjected to any significant impact. Basically, he charges rocks with energy, throws them at people, and they explode. Standard kinetic energy epic. I was more interested in the idea that the technology had been developed based on his powers. Ricky was a newer epic. He wouldn't have been around back in the old days when, as the Reckoners had explained, epics had been imprisoned and experimented on. Did this mean that kind of research was still going on? There was a place where epics were being held captive? I'd never heard of such a thing.
The gun?
Abraham asked Diamond.
Well, like I said,
Diamond tapped the wall and the video started playing.
It's a type of Gauss gun,
only it uses a projectile that has been charged with energy first. The bullet, once turned explosive, is propelled to extreme speeds using tiny magnets. The man holding the gun in the video flipped a switch and the coils lit up green. He pulled the trigger and there was a burst of energy, though the thing seemed to have almost no recoil. A splash of green light spat from the front of the gun's barrel, leaving a line in the air. One of the distant buildings exploded, giving off a strange shower of green that seemed to warp the air.
"We're not sure why it does that," Diamond admitted. "Or even how. The technology changes the bullet into a charged explosive."
I felt a shiver, thinking about the tensors, the jackets, the technology used by the Reckoners. Actually, a lot of the technology we now used had come with the advent of the Epics. How much of it did we really understand? We were relying on half-understood technology built from studying mystifying creatures who didn't even know how they did what they did themselves. We were like deaf people trying to dance to a beat we couldn't hear, long after the music actually stopped. Or, wait, I don't know what that actually was supposed to mean. Anyway, the lights given off by that gun's explosion were very distinctive, beautiful even. There didn't seem to be much debris, just some green smoke that still floated in the air, almost as if the building had been transformed directly to energy. Then it hit me. "Aurora Borealis," I said, pointing. "It looks like the pictures I've seen of it."
"Destructive capability looks good," Megan said. "That building was almost completely knocked down by one shot."
Abraham nodded.
"It might be what we need. However, Diamond, might I inquire about what you mentioned earlier? You said it didn't work."
"Oh, it works just fine," the merchant said quickly. "But it requires an energy pack to fire. A powerful one."
"How powerful?"
56 kC, Diamond said, then hesitated.
"Per shot."
Abraham whistled.
"Is that a lot?" Megan asked.
"Yeah," I said, in awe. "Like several thousand standard fuel cells worth."
"Usually," Diamond said, "you need to hook it up by cord to its own power unit. You can't just plug this bad boy into a wall socket. The shots on this demo were fired using several 6-inch cords running back to a dedicated generator." He looked up at the weapon. "I bought it hoping I could trade a certain client for some of his high-energy fuel cells, then be able to actually sell the weapon in working condition."
"Who knows about this weapon?"
Abraham asked.
"Nobody," Diamond said. "I bought it directly from the lab that created it, and the man who made this video was in my employ. It's never been on the market. In fact, the researchers who developed it died a few months later. Blew themselves up, poor fools. I guess that's what you get when you routinely build devices that supercharge matter."
"We'll take it,"
Abraham said.
"You will?"
Diamond looked surprised, and then a smile crossed his face.
"Well, what an excellent choice. I'm certain you'll be happy. But again, to clarify, this will not fire unless you find your own energy source. A very powerful one, likely one you won't be able to transport. Do you understand?"
"We will find one," Abraham said. "How much?"
12,
Diamond said without missing a beat.
"You can't sell it to anyone else,"
Abraham said.
"And you can't make it work. You'll be getting 4. Thank you."
Abraham got out a small box. He tapped it and handed it over.
"And we want one of those pin exploder things thrown in," I said on a whim as I held my mobile up to the wall and downloaded the video of the Gauss gun in action.
I almost asked for one of the motorcycles, but figured that would really be pushing things.
"Very well," Diamond said, holding up the box Abraham had given him.
What was that, anyway?
"Is Fortuity in here?" he asked.
"Alas," Abraham said, "our encounter with him did not leave time for proper harvesting. but four others, including absence.
Harvesting? What did that mean? Absence was an epic the Reckoners had killed last year. Diamond grunted. I found myself very curious as to what was in that box.
Also, Ia.
Abraham handed over a data chip. Diamond smiled, taking it. You know how to sweeten a deal, Abraham. Yes, you do.
Nobody finds out that we have this,
Abraham said, nodding toward the gun.
Do not even tell another person that it exists.
Of course not, Diamond said, sounding offended. He walked over to pull a standard rifle bag out from under his desk, then began to get the Gauss gun down. What did we pay him with? I asked Megan, speaking very softly.
When epics die, something happens to their bodies, she replied.
Mitochondrial mutation, I nodded. Yeah.
Well, when we kill an epic, we harvest some of their mitochondria, she said. It's needed by the scientists who build all this kind of stuff. Diamond can trade it to secret research labs.
I whistled softly. Wow.
Yeah, she said, looking troubled. The cells expire after just a few minutes if you don't freeze them, so that makes it hard to harvest. There are some groups out there who make a living harvesting cells. They don't kill the epics, they just sneak a blood sample and freeze it. This sort of thing has become a secret, high-level currency.
So that was how it was happening. The epics didn't even need to know about it. It worried me more deeply, however, to learn about this. How much of the process did we understand? What would the epics think of their genetic material being sold at market? I'd never heard any of this, despite my research into epics. It served as a reminder. I might have figured a few things out, but there was an entire world out there beyond my experience. What about the data chip Abraham gave him? I asked. The thing Diamond called a deal sweetener.
That has explosions on it, she said.
Ah, of course.
Why do you want that detonator?
I don't know, I said. It just sounded fun. And since it looks like a while till I'll get one of those bikes.
You'll never get one of those bikes.
I thought I'd ask for something. She didn't reply, though it seemed as if I'd unintentionally annoyed her. Again, I was having a tough time deciding what was bothering her. She seemed to have her own special rules for what constituted being professional and what didn't. Diamond packed up the gun and, to my delight, tossed in the pen detonator and a small pack of the erasers that worked with it. I was feeling pretty good about getting something extra. Then I smelled garlic. I frowned. It wasn't quite garlic, but it was close. What was garlic? Phosphorus smelled like garlic. We're in trouble, I said immediately. Nightwielder is here. 17.
That's impossible, Diamond said, checking his mobile. They're not supposed to be here for another hour or two.
He paused, then held his ear. He wore a small earpiece, his mobile twinkling in his hand. He grew pale, likely getting news of an early arrival from the girl outside.
Oh, dear.
Sparks, Megan said, slinging the Gauss gun's bag over her shoulder.
You had an appointment with Steelheart today? Abraham said.
It won't be him, Diamond said, assuming he were a client of mine. He would never come himself.
He just sends Nightwielder, I said, sniffing the air.
Yeah, he's here. Can you smell that?
Why didn't you warn us?
Megan said to Diamond.
I don't speak of other clients to—
Never mind, Abraham said. We leave.
He pointed down the hallway, opposite the way we'd come in.
Where does it lead?
Dead end, Diamond said.
You left yourself without a way out? I asked, incredulous.
Nobody would attack me, Diamond said. Not with the hardware I've got in here. Calamity! This is not supposed to happen. My clients know not to arrive early.
Stop him outside,
Abraham said.
Stop, Nightwielder? Diamond asked, incredulous. He's incorporeal. He can walk through walls for Calamity's sake.
Then keep him from walking all the way down the hallway, Abraham said calmly. There are some shadows back there. We'll hide.
I don't, Diamond started.
There isn't time to argue, my friend, Abraham said. Everyone pretends to not care that you sell to all sides, but I doubt Nightwielder will treat you well if he discovers us here. He'd recognize me. He's seen me before. If he finds me here, we all die. Do you understand?
Diamond, still pale, nodded again.
Come on,
Abraham said, shouldering his gun and jogging down the hallway past the rear of the store. Megan and I joined him. My heart was thumping. Nightwielder would recognize Abraham? What history did they have together? There were piles of crates and boxes at the other end of the hallway. It was indeed a dead end, but there were no lights. Abraham waved for us to take cover behind the boxes. We could still see the walls full of weapons back where we'd been. Diamond stood there, wringing his hands.
Yeah,
Abraham said, setting his large gun down on a box and aiming it directly at Diamond.
Menzies, David, don't fire unless you must.
Won't work against Nightwielder anyway, I said. He has prime invincibility. Bullets, energy weapons, explosions all pass through him.
Unless we could get him into the sunlight, assuming I was right. I put up a good front for the others, but the truth was, all I had was hearsay. Abraham dug in the pocket of his cargo pants and pulled something out, one of the tensors. I immediately felt a surge of relief. He was going to cut us a path to freedom.
So we're not going to wait it out?
Of course not, he said calmly. I feel like a rat in a trap. Megan, contact Tia. We need to know the tunnel nearest to this one. I'll dig us a route to it.
Megan nodded, kneeling down and cupping her mouth as she whispered into her mobile. Abraham warmed up the tensor, and I folded out the scope on his machine gun, flipping the switch to burst mode. He nodded appreciatively at the move. I sighted through the scope. It was a nice one, far nicer than my own, with distance readouts, wind speed monitors, and optional low-light compensators. I had a pretty good view of Diamond as he welcomed his new customers with hands open and a wide smile on his face. I grew tense. There were eight of them, two men and a woman in suits alongside four enforcement soldiers. And Nightwielder. He was a tall Asian man who was only half there. Faint, incorporeal. He wore a fine suit, but the long jacket had an Eastern flair to it. His hair was short, and he walked with hands clasped behind his back. My finger twitched toward the trigger. This creature was Steelheart's right-hand epic, the source of the darkness that cut New Kago off from the sun and stars. Similar darkness stirred on the ground around him, sliding toward shadows and pooling there. He could kill with that, could make tendrils of that dark mist turn solid and spear a man. Those, the incorporeity and the manipulation of that mist, were his only two known powers. But they were doozies. He could move through solid matter, and like all incorporeals, he could fly at a steady speed. He could make a room completely black, then spear you with that darkness. And he could hold an entire city in perpetual night. Many assumed that he dedicated most of his energies to this. That had always worried me. If he weren't so busy keeping the city in darkness, he might have been as powerful as Steelheart himself. Either way, he'd be more than enough to handle the three of us, unprepared as we were. He and two of his minions were in conversation with Diamond. I wished I could hear what they were saying. I hesitated, then pulled back from the scope. A lot of advanced guns had... Yes. I flipped the switch on the side, activating the scope's directional sound amplifier. I pulled the earphone out of my mobile and waved it past the chip on the scope to pair it, then stuck it in my ear. I leaned in and aimed the scope right at the group. The receiver picked up what was being said.
"Is interested in specific kinds of weapons this time,"
one of Nightwielder's minions was saying. She wore a pantsuit and had her black hair cut short up over her ears.
Our Emperor is worried that our forces rely too much on the armor units for heavy support. What do you have for more